Okay.
Good evening, everyone. Feel free to leave or keep on eating or stay or whatever you want. This is just extra entertainment in the background, so don't feel any pressure. I'm Yehudi Geberer, and I have a podcast on Jewish History Soundbites, which you might enjoy. So if you don't listen to it yet, then don't hesitate to subscribe. I do trips to Europe, Jewish history trips to Europe and beyond, some tours in Israel as well. I write a co-author, a history column in Mishpacha magazine, together with my dear friend Davi Safir, who's not here, but he told me he's going to come tonight. And I'm involved in Jewish history, so it's a great schus to be invited back to the Arche Kala and be able to schmooze a little bit with everyone here, as in previous years, a little bit to appreciate some of the rich history that we're all a part of and what we're continuing today. So first of all, thank you to the Mir Arche Kala and its organizers, and Yoina and Uri Stern and Ellie Landesman, and Avi Safir, who helped the Arche Kala, also helped me with the speech and choosing the topic and stuff like that. And thank you all for coming. It's nice to see you all. Some many familiar faces. The topic of tonight is the founding of the Mir in Yerushalayim, and specifically the group of Yerushalmis who were the first Talmidim, the first Bachrim and Galait in the yeshiva when the yeshiva started, and how that came to be. And of course I could just profile them and talk about the specific people, which I will briefly. I'll mention who they were and a little bit about them, but I'm more interested in the background, the backstory of how it came to be that the greatest and largest yeshiva in the world, known primarily for its American contingent, was really started by a bunch of Yerushalmis in the 1940s. And you know, it doesn't seem like Yerushalmi yeshiva today. So how did that come to be and how did it evolve? It's an interesting story. And this is specifically the Mir in Yerushalayim. And I want to open it up with a couple of interesting anecdotes. I'm always like the story, storytelling more than the facts and numbers. So my Rebbe in the Mir, and I was in the Mir also at one point, my Rebbe in the Mir, Rabash Arieli, he once told me that when he came, he was in Panovich, and his father wanted him to come learn in the yeshiva because he wanted him to hear shiurim from his old chavrusa, Reb Nachum Pratzovich, who Chaim Yankov Arieli used to learn with many years before that. And the Rebbe didn't want to leave Panovich, as he told me. He was by Reb Shmuel Rozovsky. It was like Matan Torah every day. How can he leave that? But his father said so. He listened to his father. Once upon a time, that was a value also. And he came to the Mir. And he said it was very difficult for him in the Mir at that time. This is a long, long time ago. He said because there were no Israeli yeshiva shebachrim like he had in Panovich, or like there were other yeshivas like Hevron or whatever in those days. It was. He said it was all Yerushalmis. Or Americans, and he's a regular yeshivish, a mainstream Israeli. So he had two choices of his social and Oryangalite. Mostly he was married guys, b'chal. But if he was talking about the few single bachrim that were there at the time, so it was either Yerushalmis or Americans. So who is he going to hang around with? So I said, so what'd you do? He said, I hung around with the Americans. I'm not going to be friends with Yerushalmis. That's very different. That's very different culturally, and I'd rather learn a new language and hang around with Americans than hang around with Yerushalmis, you know? So that's one story. The second story, to go back even further back, Reb Chatzka Levenstein, who was the Mashgiach of the Mir at different time periods in its history in Europe, in between Reb Yerucham Levavitz, before him, after him, in between. And then he came back after Reb Yerucham was Nifter, and he was the Mashgiach in the Mir. And then he went with them to Shanghai, and he was the legendary Mashgiach of the Mir in Shanghai. And then he came with them to the United States, and he was the Mashgiach of the Mir when it was reestablished in America. It was in Franklin, in Brooklyn. And then he left America because he hated it. And he came to Israel in 1949. And he was the Mashgiach here in Yerushalayim. And he left a few years later, 1954, Reb Dessler suddenly was nifter at a very young age, unexpectedly. It was very tragic. And he was the Mashgiach of Panovich. The Panovich Rav invited Reb Chatzkel to go to Panovich, and he left. Now, one of the reasons he acquiesced to the invitation of the Panovich Rav, there was several, which I'm not going to get into some of them because I want to get hired next year. But one of the reasons he left the Mir in 1954 to Panovich was because he really couldn't stand Yerushalmis. He was this Kelomer Bal Musser on time, exact, intense, serious. Zmanim is a Zman, Shachris is on time, the Sidrei HaYeshiva, everything should look Mesuder, person dresses Mesuder, and here he has a bunch of Yerushalmis in the Yeshiva. And they're showing up at 10:30 in the morning with their talis bags. They light a cigarette and drink Turkish coffee in the middle of the Beis Medrash, and he can't handle it. He's going nuts. He's going crazy from these guys. So he left and he went to Panovich, and there again it was the mainstream yeshivish Israelis, and that's where he was the Mashgiach. That's a second story. Third story is that the Reb Lezi Yudel Finkel, the Reshiva, who's founded the yeshiva, he's the one who started the yeshiva. He the one who the current Rosh Yeshiva is named after, his great-grandfather. So he when he started the yeshiva, so he gave out chalukah, he distributed chalukah, then it was the time period is also to Bachram in the yeshiva. Anyways, he fundraised, and he didn't want to be the one to be kavua giving it out every month in Rosh Chodesh. So in the 1950s, the first American showed up in the yeshiva, which hopefully I'll get to later on. An American who actually became Yerushalmi. That's how big the influence was in those days. Reb Yosef Stern, Reb Yosef Stern. I was privileged to know very well.
Is that
I used
Yosef
to each...
Stern?
Very good. Okay, yeah. We've got a. Reb Moshe Aaron Stern's younger brother, the grandson of Offer the Boss, Reb Yaakov Yosef Herman. And he learned in Pervadas, then in Telz, by Rabbi Meir Bloch, and then he took a boat to come to learn in the Mir. He never left Israel after that for the rest of his life. He got married to Yerushalmi, lived in Mea Shearim, put on a strimal, the whole deal. He told me he was never on an airplane in his life. He came, the one transatlantic voyage he'd made in his life, he did by boat in the early 50s, and that was it. He never looked back. In any event, so he was the first American in the yeshiva, so Reb Lezi Yudel felt he could trust him. So he told him, you're in charge of chalukah, so you give it out every month. He would give out the chalukah, and he told them, but you're also in charge of discipline. In other words, you have to tell them if they didn't come on time that month, you have to deduct from the chalukah, and you have to be teveya them, on them a little bit. And Reb Yosef Stern, he was a very warm personality, very laid back, he's very not that type of person. He's not going to mun things. He said, I'm not doing that. They come for chalukah, I'm giving them the chalukah. So it was very great discipline in the early years. No one was telling them what to do. You got your full chalukah no matter what you did, and it was great. A few years later, unfortunately for the Yerushalmis, this is the 1950s. The Mashgiach, Zichrono Livracha, Reb Aaron Chodesh marries into the family. He marries the daughter of Reb Chaim Zev Finkel, the previous Mashgiach, the son of Reb Lezi Yudel. And he came in, he was a chevener, his father was a mashgiach, a chevener, a meir chadash. He comes in, he's making seder in the yeshiva right away, before he was even mashgiach, this is right when he was a freshman gemar. He goes over to Reb Yosef Stern and says, I'm taking over chalukah, I'm giving it out. And he starts telling these guys, all right, you didn't even show up here. You came to the Rosh Chodesh because you knew that there was chalukah. You got to come on time, you got to be here. He starts organizing the yeshiva. He starts making it...
Saying the rule about that coming to the time in Yeshiva Davening
started by the Mashgiach. And he, before he was even Mashgiach, he would stand on the bottom of the steps, the main building, I'm familiar, the main building, the bottom of the steps. He would stand there on Rish Chodesh cash, with a wad of cash, and everyone would come out after Mincha Gedoyla, right after Mincha, he'd come out on Rish Chodesh. The Mashgiach would stand there with his cash, and he would give out the chalukah. For decades, him and Reb Aryeh Finkel, his brother-in-law, they would be the chalukah gebers, and they would do it in cash. And that's how it was given. Things work a little bit differently today, but that's how it went. Every Rish Chodesh. So he would be Teveya. He would won. Now the Yerushalmis did not like this at all. Now the previous person, remember, was Rabbi Yosef Stern. The first name is important. And the new person who's in charge is Rabbi Aaron Chadash. The last name is important. So Yerushalmis, with their poetic way of using Psukim and Tanakh for all kinds of purposes, they said, "Vayaka Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim, asher lo yada es Yosef." And he had new policies. He had new policies that were, you know, not like the old way. So these are three stories. The yeshiva goes through these stages. There's the Yerushalmi stage. It's primarily a married crowd for many, many years, for decades, really. The yeshiva was an overwhelming majority of married yungalite. There was almost no bacharim in the yeshiva, till the 1980s, pretty much. And then it goes in the post Six-Day War. After 1967, Americans start showing up. And then the mashgiach slowly but surely transforms it into a bachar-centric yeshiva. That was a big goal of his, which he succeeded in over the years. He told me many times about how that was his goal, but that's a different story. And then when the yeshivas itself became yeshivas, then it diversifies the population. Then there's Israelis and Hasidim, Americans, and all types. It becomes this international yeshiva of the entire world. So it goes through its stages, and I'm really kind of like focusing back on that early stage. And some of those stories sounded a bit critical. I don't know if you got that impression. But and it's all, of course, in good humor. But it's not really criticism. It reflects the cultural differences between classic Litvish yeshivish and the Yerushalmi culture, which was a completely different background, a completely different mentality, different type of community, different type of value system. And it was just their way of life, their cultural way of life. And these differences, which had developed in the Litvish yeshiva world over hundreds of years from the time of Reb Chaim Volozhin, did not develop that way in Yerushalayim. And it was a different community. So it was like this clash of cultures that took place. And that's why it sounds so funny. It was a different style. But at the end of the day, they were the ones who founded the Mir. They did it against all odds. They were the founding Talmidim.
What happened to all the and, from Shanghai?
We'll get to that. Excellent. Excellent question. I'm hope to get to that. You know, it depends. I don't want to get yelled at by Uri Stern for going overtime, you know. So and some of these founders, some of these early Yerushalmis were some of the greatest Talmidei Chacham in Yerushalayim and perhaps the world of the 20th century. It's a great, great tzaddikim, great, great Talmidei Chacham, some of the biggest people around Eretz Yisrael, and they were pioneers. They were the ones who started the Mir. And we all of us who are either mamish alumni of the yeshiva, or even if you're just coming to the Archei Kala, so we're all part of that, and we're all following in their footsteps. So it's something to learn about who they were and what was their background. So, the Mir Yerushalayim is founded in 1944 by Reb Lazy Yudel Finkel, which is interesting, both the person who founded it, and especially so the year that it was founded. Today, it's our beloved yeshiva. It's a large yeshiva. It's, of course, the greatest yeshiva in the world, and one of the largest. And the...
One of the greatest also?
No. So, how did Rav Lazy Yudel get to Eretz Yisrael that he could, what's that?
With the greatest Yachi Kala too.
For sure the greatest Yachi Kala. Let's hear a hand, Yachi Kala. So how did Rav Lazy Yudel get to Eretz Yisrael that he comes to found this new yeshiva in 1944, which is named the Mir, which he names the Mir. So he of course has the yeshiva in Mir, in the town of Mir, which was in Poland in the interwar period. It was founded in 1815 by the members of the Tiktinski family until the Finkels got in a bunch of years later. But the beginning of the war breaks out. The Mir, like most other yeshivas, escapes to Vilna. This is a different speech and I'm not mixing it in. I don't have time to get into it. But you'll just take my word for it now. They escape to Vilna, and then they're in Kedan, and they're trying to get out, like everyone else, because they don't want to live under the Soviets. the communists, the Soviets, no one knows what direction the war is going to take, and it's a precarious situation. And at this point, no one really knows what to do. And the Mir Bachrim on their own, they take their initiative, their leader of the Bachrim at that time, the Talmidim of the Yeshiva, is Reb Leib Malin, that they're going to take a very risky scheme that was against conventional wisdom, it was against logic, it didn't make sense, and it was against any rabbinical leadership's advice. They decided they're going to take these risky Japanese transit visas from Shiuni Sugihara and then request exit visas from the Soviet Union, which was basically suicide at the time. It was almost guaranteeing yourself a one-way ticket to Siberia. But they said, we're going to take that risk because we can't just sit and do nothing. And ultimately, it paid off. It worked out against all odds. And Reb Leib Malin, together with the yeshiva, and Reb Chaya Shmulevitz, the son-in-law of Reb Leib Yudel, who emerged as the Rosh Yeshiva, because Reb Leib Yudel did not come along, which we'll get to in a second, and the Mashkiach Reb Chatzko Levenstein, they end up in Japan and then Shanghai. And that's another story, which we consider famous, even though we don't really know much about that story either, but we'll save that for another year. So that's what happens to the Mir. So why isn't Reb Leib Yudel along with that? So Reb Leib Yudel did not like the idea, but he wasn't willing to leave his yeshiva. So he stayed with them. He himself had a very rare and hard to get certificate to Palestine. How did he get it? Reb Yitzchak Isaac HaLevi Herzog, the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, he at that time was Eretz Yisrael, wasn't a state of Israel yet, it was British Palestine, I guess you could call him the chief rabbi of Palestine. So he was a Palestinian rabbi, in other words. So he wanted to do everything. He was very active in rescue activities. And one of the heroic things he was able to accomplish was able to get above quota certificates from the British government, who were extremely rigid about immigration. Their white paper, they did not allow almost any Jewish immigration as of 1938, 1939. It completely locked the gates to Palestine. And he was able to procure a number of certificates above quota, outside the white paper, that for clergy, for rabbis. And he was able to give them. And we can't even, he doesn't get the credit he deserves for this. I'll tell you just some of the people who got those visas. The Brisker Rav, Rav Shach, Rav Zalman Saratskin, Rav Lazy Edel Finkel, a few of the big rabbis, I don't remember which ones, that's what I'm talking about. And I didn't make a whole list, but those were those visas. So Rav Lazy Edel he's able to get to, what's that?
That's who he has?
No. This is Rav Hertz I got from the British, and they were able to make it there to Stroh. They're definitely lower tier, but he tried getting for as many as he could, as whatever the British gave him. That's what he was able to get. So he had one for Rav Aaron Cutler. Mr. Zalman also was involved with that because he was his father-in-law. Rav Aaron also got one from the Vada Tzal in America, and he chose to go there for other reasons. That's a different schmooze. So Reb Leib Yudel had one to hear, but he didn't want to use it because he didn't want to leave the yeshiva. And then they go ahead and do this crazy idea of taking the Japanese visas against really what he wanted and against what the consensus was at that time, but they did it anyway. And it seemed to work. The Soviets didn't arrest them, and they were off on the Trans-Siberian Railroad heading towards Japan. So Reb Leib Yudel said, well, I'm not going with them because I don't see any reason to go to Japan at this point, but they're safe. And now that they're safe, I can use my certificate to get to Eretz Yisrael. So he separates from the yeshiva because of the circumstances of the war and all these things that were happening. And Reb Leib Yudel comes on his own, alone. So, what's that?
Reb Chaim was family, right?
Reb Chaim was, yeah. So the family split. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz went to Shanghai. Reb Chaim Zev Finkel lived here, was never in the Mir. He was in Slobodka, he was by his grandfather, the Alter. And he went with him to Chevron in 1925, 15 years earlier. And he lived in Tel Aviv at the time. He started a branch of the Slobodka Yeshiva in Tel Aviv, Heichal HaTalmud. And that's where he was living in Tel Aviv.
What was Reb Leib Yudel's plan for the yeshiva, by the way?
What everyone else's plan was. what Rav Aaron Cutler's plan, what Rav Shimon Shkub's plan, what? Yeah. Everyone's plan. They didn't know what to do. They had no clue what to do. And all of them got killed. All of them, no yeshiva survived except for the mayor. There were individuals who got out, but no yeshiva as a collective. There was no plan because it was a confusing time and no one knew what to do. By the way, just parenthetically, this is the wrong platform. This is not that topic. We're talking about Yerushalayim. But once Aaron brought it up, the running away, the escaping, at that time, you have to go back to 1940. At that time, your running away and escaping is from the Soviets. And the risk factor is, the greatest risk factor imaginable is exile to Siberia by the Soviet Union. There is no such risk factor as a Nazi invasion or the Final Solution. No one, including Hitler and the Nazis, knew about the invasion. Hitler knew about the invasion. No one else knew about the invasion, and no one, including Hitler and Nazis, knew about the Final Solution. So the whole sugya of running away was, we need to run away from the Soviets. They're anti-religion, it's dangerous, they're anti-thing, they might send this to Siberia, it's freezing in Siberia and there's not great food there either. The whole sugya was the Soviets. No one, right? The fact that the Nazis invaded a year later is a hindsight, is that we know that. And the fact the Nazis implemented a Final Solution is also hindsight, right? We know that today. That's a different topic, and leaving it at that, it's for another time. Next year or whatever. In any event, so Rav Lazidl finds himself in Eretz Yisrael without his yeshiva, which is a very strange situation. And the yeshiva is flourishing in Shanghai. They're getting supported by Ravon Kalmanovich through the Vada Tzala, who's the president of the yeshiva, the fundraiser for the yeshiva. They have Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, Rav Chatzkel, or Blade Malin. And Rav Lazidl is all alone here. Lived in Tel Aviv for a time near his son. In fact, he even made a stamp, Rosh Yeshiva Smir Ka'es B'Tel Aviv. Now I'm in Tel Aviv, which we have a record of that. And he's trying to figure out his next move. What am I going to do? So one move is just to wait it out. Wait till the yeshiva ends the war. Figure out how to get them certificates, to Eretz Yisrael, and then restart the mirror then. But that wasn't related to those little personalities. We can build Tyra now. We're not waiting till the end of the war, like the Panovich Rav, who also built Panovich during the war. So in 1944, he decides he's founding a yeshiva, anticipating that the Mir is going to be coming and joining him out of Shanghai in a couple of years. He names the yeshiva. He didn't have to name it the Mir. He said, I'm starting a Yerushalmi yeshiva for whoever wants to learn Torah that I'm going to support. But anticipating that the Mir would come and join him, he decides to name the yeshiva Yeshiva Smir, which was an interesting choice because the Mir was in Shanghai at that point, right? It's another Mir, in other words. At this point, he's opening a branch of Mir, and it's the Rosh Yeshiva opening that branch. But Mir is right now in Shanghai. So it's an interesting scenario. And where's he getting guys from? He actually had a small option of opening the yeshiva in Bnei Brak. Why? The Panovich Rav, he wanted to rebuild the Torah world that was going up in flames. And he chose Bnei Brak, and if there's no reason you should know the geography of Bnei Brak, but it's a tiny little place sandwiched in between Tel Aviv, Ramat Gan, Petah Tikva, Givatayim, and on the perimeter there are three hills. It's a mainly flat area, and Panovich Rav had this dream. In those days it was just desolate. He was able to see the hills. He said one hill is going to be Panovich Yeshiva. And the other two, I'm going to invite other Rashi Yeshiva to build their yeshiva, rebuild what was lost. He invited Tells. They chose to stay in Cleveland. They chose to build in Cleveland. It wasn't to stay. He invited Slabatka, and they took him up on it. Rabbi Isaac Sher built Slabatka Yeshiva there, and it's there till today. He tried getting the Mir, Rabbi Yudel to come take the third one, and Rabbi Yudel wanted to be in Yerushalayim. Eventually, when no Litvaks took it, he invited the Vizhna Tzareba to set up shop there, and that was very successful and is very successful until today. The Vizhna is in Bnei Brak at that spot. So he wants to So he wants to come to Yerushalayim. He's going to open a yeshiva. Now, what? Let's take a screenshot moment at what is the yeshiva situation in Yerushalayim at that time. What yeshivas exist? There's not that many religious Jews living in Yerushalayim because this is the peak of the secularization, the running to the kibbutzim. This is after the fourth and fifth aliyot. The poverty in the old yeshiva is terrible. So there's not that many religious Jews left in Yerushalayim, and even fewer yeshiva bacharim because they're the younger ones are the first ones to leave the community. But there are a few yeshivas. There's your old Yerushalmi yeshivas like Eitz Chaim, Chaye Olam, Torah V'Yira, a few others. There are some recently built Hasidic yeshivas. Most prominently, Yeshiva Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe's yeshiva that he opened in 1924. There's a few others as well. And then there's yeshivas that we would be familiar with, Litvish yeshivas, Chevron Yeshiva, which was the first Litvish-style yeshiva to open up in Eretz Yisrael. It started in Chevron, but after the massacre in 1929, so the main branch reopened up in Yerushalayim, Chatzko Sarna. And you had Merkaz Harav, Rav Kook, and you had Navardik. Rabbi Tzion Brook, a Talmud of the Altar, Navardik, opened the branch of Navardik. There was a third Navardik branch to open in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, in Palestine. There was, the first one was in Tel Aviv, Rabbi Hillel Witkin. The second one was in Bnei Brak, Rabbi Tzio Shtitzkal. And the third one was in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Tzion Brook. So you had a few of these yeshivas. And now Rabbi Zito is opening a new one. What's he going to offer? And how is he going to get Talmidim? So here we have an interesting thing. Another player that we have to give credit for what we have and we take for granted as the Mir Yeshiva today, this other player is Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. I don't know how many people know how much credit he deserves for building the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Slutsk, which was originally started off as a branch of Slobodka. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Slobodka before that. And he at the end of World War I, the Bolshevik Revolution and the communist takeover and eventually the formation of the Soviet Union made it untenable to sustain the Slutsk Yeshiva. So his son-in-law, Rav Aaron Cutler, smuggled across illegally across the border into Poland and reestablished the yeshiva in Kletsk. Mr. Zalman was the Rav in Slutsk. So he stayed, he didn't want to leave his community. But eventually he was arrested by the Soviets. It was impossible to continue, so he left the Soviet Union and he retired. He moved to Eretz Yisrael to live out his golden years in peace and quiet. But it wasn't to be. When someone on the caliber of Rosh Zalman, one of the greatest Rosh Yeshiva and Rabbanim and Paiskim in the entire Eastern Europe, showed up in Yerushalayim, they're like, this is a gold mine. They hired him immediately to be the Rosh Yeshiva of Eitz Chaim, the old Yerushalmi Yeshiva, which all of a sudden this old Yerushalmi Yeshiva, had Yerushalmi Talmidim. It was definitely nowhere near the caliber of a Litvish yeshiva in Eastern Europe. It was a Yerushalmi yeshiva. It was a local yeshiva. All of a sudden, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was there. It lifted up the whole matzav of the yeshiva, and then it started really to produce young Talmidei Chachamim. And Rabbi Zalman is there for quite some time. And he, of course, was close friends with the Lazy Yodel Finkel from way back, from Slobodka and other places, and they were very, very close, Avara yeshivas. And Rabbi Zittel shared his vision with Rabbi Zalman. And Rabbi Zalman went ahead and said the following. He said, this is perfect. Now the senior Bachram from Eitz Chaim will have a whole new level of a yeshiva to go to. They'll go to the Mir Yeshiva. And of course they're anticipating that the Mir Shanghai is going to come and join them soon, right? So there's going to be a whole new... So you take the best bachur from Eitz Chaim, my Talmidim, I'm sending you a whole group of them, the best guys, and you start Mir Yeshiva with them. As Rabbi Zalman told him. And that's what he did. He sent all of his best Talmidim from Eitz Chaim, and they are the ones who were the founding Talmidim, group of Yerushalmis, who became the first nucleus of the Talmidim Mir Yeshiva. Amazing, amazing Mesiris Nevesh, and initiative on Rabbi Zalman's part, that created the nucleus of the Talmidim. Who were these people? Honestly, I happen to only one or two of them are still alive. Most of them already passed on, but I had the schus and privilege of knowing most of them personally and speaking to them about being a Talmud in the early days. This part of what I'm about to describe is more not based on my historical research as a historian, but actually more on, I don't know if that discredits it or makes it better, but on my own personal recollections of getting to know these people. So there was, first let's just run through the list. Reb Chaim Brim, Reb Nata Freind, Yibadal Chaim, Reb Mendel Atik, who's still alive. He might actually be the only one on this list who's still alive. Reb Moshe Shia Landau, Reb Yudel Shapira, Reb Moshe Salant, Reb Zundel Kreuzer, his brother Reb Beryl Kreuzer, Reb Ram Yankov Wiener, and last but not least, the only non-Eitz Chaim member of the group, Reb Chiel Zilberberg, who was known to many recent Talmidim of the yeshiva because he was the Balkairi for about 60 years in the yeshiva till his passing just a couple of years ago, and a very, very special man. He was the only one not from Eitz Chaim. Why? What happened? There's another Yerushalmi yeshiva, Tayr V'Yira, which if Eitz Chaim was just an average Yerushalmi yeshiva, so Tayr V'Yira was a bit below average Yerushalmi yeshiva, right? They didn't have Rabbi Zalman there. So Rabbi Lezer wasn't interested in taking anyone from there. And Tayr V'Yira felt that we want to be part of this. We're starting the Mir, the best guys. This is like the talk of the town in Yerushalmiville. That so if Tayr V'Yira doesn't have anyone there, that means they don't have any best guys. So they said to Rabbi Lezer, no, maybe take one guy from our yeshiva also. So he interviewed Rabbi Chiel Zilberberg, and he said, all right, you know, but he made a few conditions with him. Rabbi Chiel told me this. He made a few conditions with him. Rabbi Yudel was used to the Alta Mirrors. You don't get married till you're 35, 40. You're here to learn. You're here to learn for 20 years. You're not budging. You're becoming a serious Lamdan, you know, and then it's worth investing in you. These Yerushalmis, they marry when they're 18 years old. And they start having three kids a year, and they're schnarring out here and making weddings and pickles in Yerushalmi kugel. They're not going to be serious. He made it tonight with him. He was 17. Reb Lechiel was 17. He said, "No getting married for 3 years. Right? No marriage for 3 years. A freezer, a three-year freezer." And Reb Lechiel said, "All right, that's it. It's worth it." So he made a couple other conditions with him. But he made it in. So before I, you know, talk a little bit about some of them, who were these Yerushalmis? Who were they? Were they members of the old Yishuv, which didn't really exist anymore in the 1940s? Were they more recent? Were they Hasidim? Were they Prushim? Prushim are the Snagdim, Talmidei Agra, non-Hasidim, however you want to call it, whatever PC term you want to use. So what part of the group, what part of Yerushalayim were they from? So much of the group came from Hasidic families. So that means a lot of these founding Yerushalmis were actually Hasidic Yerushalmis, primarily Karlin. There were a couple of one, the Tzutzans or whatever, beyond, Chaim Brim was a Beyoner, one of them was a Tzanzer, but about five or six of them were Karliners, and a couple of them were from the Prushim, Litvaks, Talmidei Agra, that part of Yerushalayim. It's interesting because we make an assumption about the old Yishuv, and old Yishuv, like I said, had kind of imploded within itself after World War I because of economic collapse and also because of the secularization that was happening on the Yerushalayim streets and the zeitgeist, the you know, going into the kibbutzim and to the building of the land, and it was very exciting. And what we consider Yerushalmi old Yishuv was really more recent immigrants who came from Hungary, who came from other places, and consciously joined the remnants of the old Yerushalayim community. I'll give you one example of it. A couple of years after the founding of the Mir, late 40s, early 50s, Rabbi Meir Bronsdorfer joins the yeshiva, right? So he was a Talmud of the yeshiva as well, not from the founders, right? Rabbi Meir Bronsdorfer was a Dayan in the Eid HaRedis, one of the biggest Paiskim in Yerushalayim, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a very big. And he was, you looked at him, Yerushalmi, right? Really Yerushalmi, yeah, dressed like Yerushalmi. And he was a Dinah Eid Charedis, and he was a chassid of Toldos Aharon, Toldos Avraham Yitzchak, one of the two, right? And Yerushalmi old Yishuv, I mean, he probably came 300 years ago with the not with the Talmidim of the Gra, with the Rabbeim of the Gra, you know? He was a Holocaust survivor. His parents were from Belgium, and they escaped to France during the war, and he was in hiding in France, and they came after the war as Holocaust survivors, the family. And that's how he made it here. And he becomes Yerushalmi. He joins that community. That's what most of the so-called Yerushalayim Old Yishuv was at that point in the 1940s and 50s. So that's important to bear in mind as well. So it gives them a little bit more of a connection to Europe than we would normally assume. Rabbi Chiel Zilberberg, who I mentioned before, was a Yeki. His family's from Germany. He himself was born in Germany. If you knew his personality, he was a little bit Yekish actually. But he told me he was, I think, 7 or 8. How old was he? 6 years old when he 1933 when he came to Yerushalayim. So and he joins the Yerushalmi community, right? So it's a Yeki. It's a from Belgium, it's a Holocaust survivors, it's all that. You know, Rabbi Lerut himself was Hungarian from Satmar, right? The Rabbi told us Aaron, told us our mitzvah, right? That's in general. So who are these people? Rabbi Chaim Brim, who was actually a cousin of mine, he was one of the big tzaddikim in Yerushalayim, tremendous Talmud Chacham, a great leader of Torah, religious Jewry in Israel for a half a century afterwards, mostly behind the scenes. He was Rosh Yeshiva in several places, in Slobodka and Bnei Brak. He had his own yeshiva in Yerushalayim Mishkan Yosef. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Bayan. He was Rosh Yeshiva in New Square. He used to go half a year to New Square for about 25 years next to Muncie. And he had chaburas in the Mir. Mir Talmidim would go to his house. If you ever speak to any mirror over the age of 50, Rabbi Aaron David, Rabbi Asher, Rabbi Yom Kalva, all these people will tell you about how he used to go to chaburas in the house by Rabbi Chaim Brim. Very warm person also, a very lovable person. I was very close to him. I was his cousin. I used to eat Shabbos by him. He didn't like his fake teeth, very uncomfortable, and it made him hard for him to speak. And he loved schmoozing with us, and also speaking and learning. So his teeth were in, he couldn't. It was hard for him to talk then. And he didn't want to wait till the end of the meal. So in between courses, he would take out his teeth, put it on the table, and he said, "What are you learning in yeshiva?" He was a very, very geschmacka guy. He was a very amazing person. Another person was Ramnata Freind. Rabbi Freind also, he lived right across the street from Beis Yeshaya, where you guys are learning tomorrow morning, right, that building across the street. So I used to eat Shalosh Shudas by him for about 2 years. I used to go, every Shalosh Shudas, we used to go to him, a bunch of guys, and he would tell us stories. The best thing about it is that he had Alzheimer's at the end of his life. Now, the way Alzheimer's works is that your short-term memory is shot, is gone, but your long-term memory is perfect. So he would tell us stories that he remembered from the Mir, from Tzaddikim, Yerushalayim, but he wouldn't remember that he already told us that story 5 minutes ago. So we would hear the stories again and again, and this way I remembered them. So I was able to use those stories till today. And he was rich, and he was a Rosh Yeshiva in Eitz Chaim. He was the closest Talmud to Rabbi Zalman Meltzer in Eitz Chaim, and so much so that Rabbi Zalman had a very didn't have a good penmanship, a sloppy handwriting. So when he wrote Evanah Ezel, the printer wasn't able to read it. So what he did was he had his wife, who was quite a character, daughter of Shagar Feivel Frank, from Kovna, it's in Bela Hindel, I think her name was. So she wrote it for him. She had a beautiful handwriting. So he would, it was all his lushing, right? He would walk back and forth, and he would say exactly what he wanted to say, and she would write it, and he would check it to make sure that she wrote it correctly. But if it was Friday afternoon, and she was cooking for Shabbos, and he wanted to write down a Shtickel Torah for Evan Ezel, so he would have Ramnata Freind write his Zil. So Ramnata Freind used to tell us, he said, "I'm part of the Mechaber of Evan Ezel. I wrote part of it." So much so, I mentioned that Rabbi Aaron was given a certificate to come to Palestine at the beginning of the war he didn't use. But Rav Aaron's son did use it. He got also a certificate from his grandfather, Rabbi Zalman, Rabbi Schneer Cutler, and he came to Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Schneer Cutler spent 6 years or 7 years in the war. He was engaged the entire time to Rebbetzin Rishel, the longest engagement in Jewish history. She ended up in Shanghai. he was in Eretz Yisrael, and he lived by his grandfather, by Rabbi Zalman. And here you have this Rav Schneur Cutler, one of the greatest minds in Eastern Europe. Who's he going to learn with? There's no one in Yerushalayim on his level. So Rabbi Zalman told him his best shot is with his close Talmud, Rav Nata Freind. And Rav Nata Freind was his chavrusa for 6 years. And they remained very close. In fact, Rav Schneur Cutler's children, I remember Rav Malkiel, I saw him coming, I was walking to Beis Yeshaya, I saw Rav Malkiel. Rav Malkiel came to Beis Yeshaya, what's he doing? He didn't come to Beis Yeshaya, he was coming out of Rav Nata Freind's house. He was visiting Eretz Yisrael, and he went to Rav Nata. So Rav Malkiel Cutler. So Rav Nata used to say how he was chavrusas with Rav Schneur Cutler during those years. Now I want to speculate something, and I'm just sharing this because I don't have any evidence for this. Rav Nata Freind told me that he learned with him for those 6 years. Now until 1944, Rav Nata Freind was an Eitz Chaim, all good. But Rav Nata Freind also told me that he was one of the founding Talmidim of Mir Yeshiva. So he wasn't an Eitz Chaim. But he also told me that he was chavrusas with Rav Schneur Cutler all the 6 years. So I want to speculate that Rav Schneur Cutler might have been somewhat also one of the founding members of Mir Yeshiva. I don't think he was ever officially here. I think he was officially together with Rav Zalman. He was doing stuff for him also. There was a branch of Kletzky Yeshiva in Rehovot at the time that Rav Schneur was involved with. So I don't think he was ever officially here, but he was...
Lakewood is a branch of Mir.
That for sure. That for other reasons too. So Rav Schneur might have been involved at the time because of his learning with Rav Nata Freind at being there at the beginning of the Mir also, which is an interesting thing to speculate. Again, I have no evidence, but based on my conversations with Rav Nata, it would seem to be something along those lines. Rav Moshe Shia Landau was, an unknown person. He died very young. He's underappreciated. He lived in Shari Chesed. He was from a Tzanzer family. He was close to a lot of the Tzaddikim in Yerushalayim at the time, the Brisker Rav, the Chabina Rav, in Shari Chesed. Rabbi Yidl Shapiro was one of the most unique and unfortunately less well-known Tzaddikim of the 20th century. He was in the top 10, perhaps. He was he went to the Chazon Ish, and he basically became like a child to him. He basically lived by him. The Chazon Ish did not have children, and the Chazon Ish, three of these founders of the Mir, the Chazon Ish called them meine Kinder. Rabbi Shishia Landau, Rabbi Chaim Brim, and Rabbi Yidl Shapiro. They were by the Chazon Ish all the time. They learned by him. They were Talmidim of his. They were his closest Talmidim. And Rabbi Yidl Shapiro actually stayed there. He stayed in Bnei Brak. He left his whole Yerushalminess behind. The stipler made him the rabbi of Letterman's shul. The stipler and Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky were never the rav of the shul. The rav was Rabbi Yidl Shapiro. And he was the head of Kail Chazon Ish. The guy who was in this in Karelitz. He was considered the senior Talmud of the Chazon Ish in there. Up there with the Chaim Greinerman, up there with the family, with the stipler, with the family members themselves. And Gedalia Nadal, of course, also was the big Talmud of the Chazon Ish in Bnei Brak. So he actually, because Rabbi Yidl Shapiro was so great, and a chacham, he was considered a kluger mensch, a very wise person, and he was above politics. He never got involved in anything. So he was very often the peacemaker in many famous or infamous disputes in the inter-Haredi world, in politics, in yeshivas, and without going into specific names and details, he was the go-to person, and he mediated, some with more success than others. And he was a tremendous person, also passed away just a few years ago. Rav Moshe Salant is someone who I used to go to also. His father, Rav Yosef Salant, the Ber Yosef, is a sefer that people use. He was Rosh Yeshiva in several places. He was also a very warm person. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Beis Yisrael in his later. He's in a small kail here in Beis Yisrael, so I used to see him walking through the neighborhood. He lived in Batei Breide, and once in a while I would go to Davin Vasikin there in Batei Breide, where there was another one of the 10 founders, which we'll get to in a second, Rav Zundel Kreuzer. So we used to go to Rav Moshe Salant afterwards for Kiddush. We would sit in his house, and he would share Divrei Torah with us and ask us about the Mir and tell us about his time there when he was and he used to say very proudly, I was from the first ones. I want you to know that. You're all coming after me. So it was something that they understood was making history. Rav Zundel Kreuzer, I think, is quite famous. Most people have heard of him. one of the Tzadikim Yerushalayim, Arachama, the Svarim that he's written. Also someone who used to go to, he was a person who knew Kala Terekula. I used to go to him Shabbos morning by Vesikin and Batei Breida. So there'd be like 20, 30 yeshiva bachrim from the Mir and Brisk. Because he was a Mir, he used to tease the Briskers. It was very geschmack because these Briskers would come with all the shtalts. And Mirs, you know, we don't come with shtalts, we come very late. And he would dafka make fun of them. He would start as soon as everyone made kiddush, he would go around and say to everyone, Frega kasha, ask a question. And people would ask from Kol HaTorah Kula, from anywhere. And as you were finishing the question, he would start answering, no matter what you asked. It was an incredible sight to see in front of our eyes, as a lesson to us impressionable young yeshiva guys, to see someone who knew Kol HaTorah Kula on his fingertips, literally. It was an incredible thing. And he had a great sense of humor, so he would make fun of the Briskers of their questions. And one of them, I was there, it was Parshas Parah that week. So one guy, he came with a great question, a chumrah that no one heard of. I'm telling you, this guy, he invented a new chumrah. And he said, there's a shita in, I don't even know where, because I don't know anything, but that Parshas Parah might also be a deraisa, like Shabbos Zachar. There's one opinion that holds that. So since we make women's minyanim to lane the parsha for Parsha Zachar, so we should make Lefidus Shita, we should make minyanim for women to hear Parsha's Parah. So the Reb Zundel said, Chamnish Givust has b'macht minyanim for Parsha Zachar for vayim. I didn't even know that we make minyanim for women for Parsha Zachar. So what are you arguing and chanting for Parsha's Parah? He'd always tell the Briskers, take another rugala. He didn't eat the right shear for Ala Michya. You should have eaten more. You'd say the mirrors ate enough already. His brother Beryl, Dav Meir Kreiser, was also a big Tzadik Yerushalayim. Rav Yaakov Weiner was one of the early Talmidim in the Chazon Ish. Also died young. He was the brother-in-law of Rav Chaim Greinerman. It's interesting, Rav Chaim Greinerman was one of the early ones. He was a non-Yerushalmi. He's the Chazon Ish's nephew, grows up in his uncle's house because Rav Shmuel Greinerman was working in America in MTJ at the time. And Rav Chaim Greinerman is one of the early Talmidim in Yeshiva. Not right there when it's founding, but like a year or two later, he came. And he's the one, if you noticed, almost everyone on the list was close with the Chazon Ish, close Talmud of the Chazon Ish. Very interesting. These are Talmidim of Rabbi Zalman, grew up as Yerushalmis. The Talmidim of Rabbi Zalman Meltzer and Eitz Chaim. They're the founding Talmidim of the Mir. And coincidentally, almost all of them become close Talmidim of the Chazon Ish. It's a very, very interesting sociological Torah phenomena. And so partially Reb Chaim Greinerman is responsible himself. He came there almost at the beginning and he encouraged these superstars, these tremendous, rising Talmid HaChacham to come to his uncle, to come to the Chazon Ish. And partly it's because they were curious. Reb Chaim Brim, before he went to the Chazon Ish for the first time, he told me this. Rav Chaim Brim took all the Chiddush HaTorah that he wrote by Rabbi Zalman and in the Mir, and he burned them. He said, I'm coming to the light. I'm coming to hear from the Chazon Ish. I'm changing my life. I'm born again. And Rav Chaim Brim said he was, and the Chazon Ish called him my child, right? The child that he never had. He completely became a Chazon Ishnik. And it's a very interesting that all of these became Chazon Ishniks, and there's another Mir Chazon Ish connection, because we all know that the main Mir Chazon Ish connection is Rabbein Ishfinkel. He married a Greinerman, and then when he becomes a Sheshiva, he brings a Generator, and he brings Ibermeistering, and all of a sudden the Mir becomes this Chazon Ish place. 40 minutes after Shkia, we can't do it 32 minutes like the rest of Yerushalayim. I mean, you guys wait 72 at Nebuch. But so all these things, but really the roots of it were in those founding Talmidim. They were all close Talmidim of the Chazon Ish.
Wasn't Bat Zion also the Chazon Ish?
What?
Wasn't Mrs. Bat Zion also called by the Chazon Ish?
Called by?
Mrs. Bat Zion Calabar.
Yeah. I think so. I believe so. Yeah.
At what point did they end up becoming Talmidim? Did they leave when the people from New York came, or were they
So that's an excellent question. So they first of all, they stayed by the Chazon Ish and the Mir at the same time. They would go back and forth. They used to describe it. A few of them told me about the Nesiyah. And today you take the 402, and if there's no traffic, you're there in less than an hour. or you take a car. But this usually is traffic, so it's almost like those days anyway. In those days, you had to take a bus to Tel Aviv, and then wait an hour or so, and then take another, like, hasa'ah from Tel Aviv to Bnei Brak. It said it usually took between 3 to 4 hours to get from Yerushalayim to the Chazon Ish in those days. So I want to get to what you said, because we want to know, so first of all, where were they located? I'm going to finish up already. Finish up there. First, started off in Batei Milner. Let me describe it. If you're standing by the main Beis Medrash today, you turn left towards the Reshiva Zatzal's home. I don't know how many are familiar, but you go, if you're standing in front, you're in between the Mir and the main Beis Medrash and Beis Shalom, and you make a left towards Ner Gavriel, towards the Reshiva Zatzal's home, and you go up into a bunch of Yerushalmi buildings, that's Batei Milner. And there was a Beis Medrash where Nissen Kaplan used to give shir many years ago. I don't know if anyone remembers that. And I don't know who Reb Nissen Kaplan is. He used to be a Rebbe Magid Shir. It's also history. We'll give on that one year. What?
He won the $10.
So he that was the original Mir Beis Medrash. That was Batei Milner. Then they moved to Achva. You think the Briskers own Achva? The Mir was in Achva first. And then they came to where their present location is. Reblazio bought the property and started building.
Didn't Reblazio send Bochum to start Brisk also?
That also. That's a different story. Yeah. Reblazio also sent Bochum to start Brisk. The Reblazio was the Reshiva. His what? Right. In Poland also. In Poland also. He would send the Reblei Mal and all these Mir Talmidim to go learn by the Rav. There was a bunch of Finkels, Reb Lezi Yiddel Finkel, his son Reb Chaim Zev, and Reb Banish would come in a little bit also already at that time. Reb Chaim Shalevitz, of course, was still in Shanghai, he wasn't there. Reb Moshe Finkel, Reb Eli Baruch Finkel, is Zechanu Levracha's father, he was a Rebbe in Yeshiva then. There's a few other people, Reb Zalman Ratberg is his son, Zangazin Shtar. Reb Zalman Ratberg was a Alta Mirror, and he also was Talmud of Shimon Shkup in Grodno. And he had come here a few years earlier together with his close friend, Reb Shmuel Rozovsky, and they were in Petach Tikva, and he was hired as a Magid Shir in the early Mir, Reb Zalman Ratberg, before he went to Bnei Brak and started his own yeshiva, Beis Meir, after his following, Mir Krelitz. And there was another interesting character who was around the yeshiva in those days. I don't know if he had an official position or he occasionally gave chaburis, Reb Dov Sakalovsky, the only surviving child of the Mir Rav, Reb Avraham Tzvi Kamai, Reb Avraham Hirsch Kamai, Reb Lezi Yiddel's brother-in-law. Reb Tzvi Kamai was offered to go together with the yeshiva to Vilna and then later to Shanghai, and he refused. He said, I'm not just the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva, I'm the Rav of the town, and I don't abandon my townspeople. I'm staying with the Kehila. And he gets killed together with them. It was just his yard site, Davi pointed out to me a few days ago. Reb Tzvi Kamai was killed. His whole entire family was killed. He had three daughters. One daughter, who is childless, who was married to this Reb Dov Sokolovsky, moved to Eretz Yisrael before the war. It would be a segula to have children. They never had children. He was an interesting character. He was a big kanoia, part of the Turi Karta. And he's the only daughter and son-in-law of Avraham Tzvi Kamai, and Reb Lezi Yiddel is his uncle. So he hung around the mirror also in those early years a little bit as well. Now we get to what you said. So what happened after the war? So now Mir Shanghai is over. So they're still stuck in Shanghai for a year or two after the war. Rome Kalmanovich finally was able to get them to the United States, and then he invited them to stay. Blaise Yiddel wanted them to come here. And the Talmidim weren't that keen on coming to Eretz Yisrael. They didn't know if the prospects of them getting a decent shidduch would be good here. Weren't that many people who lived here bechlal. In New York, there was a lot more going on. It wasn't easy to get here. The State of Israel hadn't been founded yet, so the British weren't allowing anyone in, and here they are in America, and they were starting to get settled there. Some of them were starting to get jobs. Some of them were starting to get married. It didn't look like any of them would make it here. Reb Yiddel was very upset. He had worked so hard that everyone should come here. There's a very sharply worded letter, which I don't want to quote here, about how he basically condemns anyone who doesn't come, but they did not listen to him, and almost no one came. His son-in-law, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, sent his family here. They split. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz split from his wife and kids at Marseille. How do you say that port in French? Marseille. Thank you. And the family came here, and he went to America. And then he came and rejoined them in Yerushalayim. Reb Chaska, like I said, eventually came as well. And then a few people, like Reb Nachum. Reb Nachum is one of the few who made it. A few others came. Reb Nachum Lesman, the Reshiva Zalzayin Gesund Shtark, his father-in-law, Reb Nachum Lesman, who came a couple of years later also to the Yerushalayim, and others. There are a few others, not too many. Almost all of them, by their own choice, decided to stay in America. But they weren't a central yeshiva in America either, because most of them wanted to get married. Most of them needed jobs, either real jobs, just, you know, have a store or work somewhere, or rabbeim in yeshivas and tarvadas and YU and whatever yeshivas would hire them, or rabbanim in shuls and communities, and they spread out. And even the core who stayed, so some of them were being supported by Ron Kalmanovich. They already settled there, so many of them stayed there. Another group got together and started Beis HaTalmud, Reb Leib Malin and Reb Chaim Sucker and their friends. So almost none of them ended up here. So Reb Leib Yiddel's grand plans of them having them join here didn't materialize, and very, very few Altamirers ended up here. And therefore it remained for quite some time a Yerushalmi yeshiva. And look what was able to be built from it and flourish from it. And we all follow in their footsteps. So just mention one last thing to finish off. I went long over time here. One last thing is that, like I said, Reb Yosef Stern was the first American. He told me he was the only American. Everyone else was Yerushalmi. He himself converted to Yerushalmiism when he got married. He married Yerushalmi also and put on the whole thing. And a couple of years later, a young high school student from Chicago showed up at yeshiva as the second American in yeshiva. And that was Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel. Lazy Yiddel didn't have he didn't have any chavrusa for him. He's Yerushalmi's. So Reb Yosef Stern was his tutor. Reb Yosef Stern was his first Rebbe in yeshiva. When I used to eat Reb Yosef Stern, he told me that the Reshiva Zatzal used to go visit him every Yomtif Mekabel Pnei Rabbi Beregel, because he was his tutor when he came as a high school student, as a Karas HaTayt. So the Reshiva Zatzal was here in a very interesting social environment. Here you have this modern Orthodox kid from Chicago, and all his friends are Yerushalmi. And the Reshiva, I heard from him several times, he said how they befriended him, and how they were warm to him, and how they accepted him, and how he became friends with this group of Yerushalmis. So the Reshiva Zatzal was able to integrate himself into that environment and then go ahead and build the most diverse non-Yerushalmi yeshiva in the world. And luckily, we all have a part in it. Thank you. I did it in the beginning. What? Oh, I did a walking tour of Beis Yisrael neighborhood. It's available. It's available on the Mir's website. Mir's website. And for those who here weren't in the beginning, so make sure to subscribe to my podcast, Jewish History Soundbites. Thank you.